and welcome to another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. I'm Ari Rosenbaum, along with Dan Venturi. Dan, how are you?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I can't complain. Finally, at least today, it's springtime until it, you know, pours later. But, I was finally outside for, like, the first time doing work, and, it was fun, so.
Yeah, it was definitely enjoyable, the first part of the day. The 7 day looks pretty strong. We're at 72, Saturday. So
it's about time. I mean, it's almost June already, and one day I'm putting the AC on, the next day I'm putting the heat on. It's just very, very crazy and rainy. And I was trying to grow some tomatoes in the backyard, and like the barrel was like completely flooded with water, and it was just such a disaster.
How about the citronella? How'd that work out?
It's working out, my wife still blames me for the death of the old one because she didn't repot it, it was outside with all the rain and it was still dying.
So what was the story? But she said that you didn't water it enough?
Yes, and it's been, raining so hard, I've been seriously contemplating building an ark the last couple weeks.
Oh, man.
So, we had a fun episode last week talking about the 401k National that 401k National Conference, that HR Association, and again, we'll be in Denver in 4 weeks, by the time you listen to this, 3 weeks from today at Coors Field, Friday, June 14th, $100 gets you, 4 hours of content, lunch, stadium tour, meet and greet with a Rocky player who I still never ever recalled, Brian Spielberg, he's an announcer for the Royals or whatnot, and a game that night against the Padres from Coors Field. And then we were going to take our summer break and come back with September in Cleveland, October in Foxborough, November probably East Rutherford, New Jersey, in December in Arlington, Texas, and of course that 401k National Conference, Disney World, March 2020. So, let's talk about our topic for this week, and it's something that really resonates, especially in my practice as a risk attorney. It seems that these days, all plan errors seem to be payroll these days, payroll issues, and it's a topic that's very near and dear to Dan's heart, being a 316. As a 316 provider, Dan, what are the payroll issues that you have to deal with, and how your 316 service stands out amongst the competition when dealing with payroll issues?
Thanks, Ari. So there was this crazy statistic that we use in our compliance, and it basically points to 80-85% of all plan errors are attributable to some payroll issue, right? Arguably the biggest is the definition of comp being misunderstood. So you've got money types, you've got benefit types that aren't being deferred again. So that's an operational error, right? You have to comply with the definition of compensation. If it says, you're deferring on moving expenses, something as esoteric as that, and you're not, well, that's an issue. So that's definitely the big one. Another one we see a lot are comp increases or bonuses not being withheld or subject to deferrals. That's a big one. So one of the things that our software does is builds a trend line, and the trend line is designed to generally, payroll should be the same, right? The changes shouldn't be that frequent in payroll, unless, of course, it's a situation where they're hourly workers and then there's overtime. That's all built in. But the point being, things are fairly static in terms of things like comp. So we trend that, and the software is basically designed to spot anomalies above or below the trend line that we've established. And then we review it. Emissions, right? That's a big one. Folks suddenly disappear from payroll, right? There are tons of times where Jane Doe's on this week's payroll, and then suddenly she's not on the next week's payroll, and she resurfaces. So what do you have there? That's an impermissible participant exclusion. auto enroll, you know, is another issue where folks are supposed to be withholding or not withholding, depending upon how that goes, and inevitably the opposite is effectuated in payroll. So you've got folks that want to defer that were defaulted, and then the exact opposite, you have folks that don't want to defer and were defaulted. And you know, obviously a part of that is the participants not doing what they're supposed to, but nevertheless, those are all some of the bigger issues that we see in payroll. You know, it gets really, really granular. Oftentimes, you know, again, surrounding that definition of comp, that's really the big one. That's a misinterpreted one. Let's call it that. And then the rest of it's just mistakes. Just oversights that the software is designed to catch.
Yeah, we'll talk about the comp issue again. But what kind of mistakes do you find out? You know, you're always talking about with scrubbing the data, and you know, just I mean, what are the issues that you see on a weekly basis that you know that really are problematic when dealing with the plan?
Again, you know, it's wide ranging, but what you learn in doing the payroll over and over again are certain mistakes are endemic to certain plan sponsors, right? So if that plan sponsor is having a hard time with, and then this is actually a good example of something that's a little esoteric. There's in the payroll code, in the payroll file rather, they put in a term date. Rather than a transfer date, the other benefits feed off of that same payroll file, and there are times where additional data comes over that causes the record keeper system to go haywire. Folks are intending that term date to sort of indicate they're no longer in location X, they're now in location Y. But what that does is it causes that week's contribution to be spit back because the system now thinks that they're terminated. So like that's a problem that's specific to one or two of our clients. Some of our other clients, again, not talking about specifically the definition of comp, they flat out forget to put in auto enroll increases. Right, so come January, there's always a ton of cleanup because the payroll folks are thinking that despite the fact that we're telling them the 3% is now 4%, don't see any sort of change for that participant. And inevitably, they're under contributing. They're not honoring the auto increase. Other clients, they, you know, raises are in March, and somehow or another that comp doesn't make it into the payroll system, or at least into the file that we get. So those are three of the ones that are probably the most recent. But a huge client of ours just did a merger. You know, Ari, and there was a ton of overfunding, there was a ton of underfunding. That plan was so big that we didn't pump the brakes on the submissions. Because, you know, we're dealing with 3,000 participants, so those four or five folks that kind of got screwed up in the wash there, we're fixing retroactively. So we have folks that got paid too much that we have to disgorge. We've got folks that were paid too little that we have to make sure that contribution is to trust, adjusted for earnings. There were other screw-ups in there, impermissible exclusions that we actually have to do a corrective for. So it really depends. I mean, real, real, real big issues. We're pausing the submission. It's not even going to the trust. We haven't had too many of those, thankfully. Generally, it's just little exclusions that are highlighted that the software catches that we go back to retroactively and adjust.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the big things about payroll is obviously the big two payroll providers you know, try to tap their services as a TPA. Oh, you know, we do payroll, we do integration. But the errors that you see have nothing to do. They won't be solved by the payroll companies anyway, right?
Correct. Unless someone's actually looking at that file and comparing it to something, right? A census, the previous week's submission, you know, the deferral files that the record keeper has. Just integrating directly with the payroll provider is not a big deal, right? Pretty much most record keepers these days have the ability to take a direct feed from a payroll provider. So that kind of benefit might have been something to talk about 10 years ago, but it's nowhere near significant, right, these days. As significant, I guess, is a better way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, they always tout, you know, the big deal about it. And, you know, when I would write the articles talk about payroll provider TPAs, I would always say, well, you know, payroll doesn't have much to do with 401k plans. And it's kind of a misnomer when I would say that. My issue is the fact that you're using a specific payroll provider really has no bearing on payroll in the 401k plan. That's really a separate issue. And, you know, they tout integration, but, you know, they also integrate with, you know, the big providers out there like Empower and whatnot. And we're talking to the payroll companies, some of the local ones. Seamless integration is, like, really not a big deal.
No, not a big deal at all. And you know, from a perspective of a 316, you know, we talk about this all the time. There are not a whole lot of 316 providers that go anywhere near the payroll. And the ones that claim to don't necessarily take the liability for it, right? There are a couple of record keepers that have a different approach to the upload process, and they sort of have a gatekeeper. But really all that person's doing is making sure the file format's good and everything balances out. There's no check, there's no evaluation of the data. They don't compare it to anything to see what changed. I mean, I said before that you know, certain things in payroll are pretty static. That's true, but at the same time, it's a dynamic thing, and there's data flowing every week, right? Every 2 weeks. You know, it's kind of like the mail, right? It just never stops. And there's a big difference between simply submitting a file and actually, you know, getting into the nitty-gritty and making sure that what's submitted is compliant.
Exactly. And then talking about another issue, obviously, dealing with payroll is the biggest issue that I see in terms of compliance is the late deposit of salary deferrals. It's the number one, I think, you know, number one with a bullet, as they would say, in terms of a compliance issue. And, you know, that issue really goes back to the days where we had a regulation still on the books that says, you know, you have a safe harbor for plan sponsors if you get the deferrals in by the 15th day of the following month. And then the DOL said, you know what, forget about that. We really mean as soon as possible. And for some employers, that could be as soon as 3 days. And, you know, with the days, you know, I started in this business when a lot of salary deferrals, the deposits were still made by check, and now at ACH and, you know, all this internet stuff, there really is no excuse for plan sponsors to be late. But, you know, it's a repetitive function, and it, for some reason or another, it's a function that is always failing, where the plan sponsor doesn't get in the money as soon as possible.
Yeah. I that's our single biggest challenge, right? So we contractually give ourselves, worst case, no more than 48 hours from receipt of the payroll to upload it. Most of the time, they're turned around within 24 hours. And it's, you know, to your point exactly, I mean, we add another step in sort of the chain of custody of that payroll, and then, you know, obviously the reason is to keep the plan compliant and avoid future headaches. But at the same time, we as a 316 need to be very cognizant of the timing right now. If the client doesn't submit us the payroll, you know, we'll follow up. But ultimately, the payroll has to come from the client. There's some some, you know, responsibility that they need to, you know, grasp and understand. But generally, you know, once we get the payroll, it's up within 24 hours, and that's exactly to comply with those regulations. We do not want to create a situation where they're on timely deferrals, and you know, the DOL is starting to write letters specifically to deferral, late deferral or untimely deferral submissions in they see in the 500. So, you know, that from our standpoint is some low hanging fruit just to sort of avoid a headache and get it in, you know, as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it's just an interesting concept that, you know, it's something that, you know, I just find it funny with plan sponsors that specifically some plan sponsors just really, no matter what, can't get that in. And it's usually, I find it, you know, the two clients that I have are both restaurant groups, multiple locations, multiple plan role, payroll providers, and they just can't get the money in as soon as possible.
Yeah, well, they should probably streamline. Maybe they should get a hold of the Jet folks.
Yeah, sure. But as a 316, how do you deal with plan sponsors that, you know, you hit them with a stick or something?
Yeah, short of, you know, sending some of my Italian cousins over to visit them, you know, the best we can do is bug them, right? I mean, again, it's on them if they don't get it to us, but we do nudge them as much as possible. Now, there's some clients that are routinely late, but, you know, it's routine, right? It's not 3 days and it's not 10 days. It's always, you know, 7 or 8 days. So there's a consistency, there's a pattern there, and we're okay with that. It's the folks that usually submit it within, you know, a day or 2 days, and day four, day five, day six comes and there's no payroll. That's when we start, you know, sending some emails and making some calls.
Yeah, I mean, with plan sponsors, I mean, this is an issue, obviously, near and dear to my heart, because I deal with so many plan sponsors that, you know, have this problem, and there are multiple problems. It's multiple, you know, late payrolls. It's never just one. Yeah. It's multiple. And, you know, it's a question on 5500. And even if you fix your problem and you answer yes on the 5500, lo and behold, you're going to get a letter from the Department of Labor and say, you know, oh, by the way, we noticed you had late deferrals. By the way, we don't have a copy of your application for the voluntary fiduciary compliance program. And, you know, it's a costly error in terms of the legal expense and in terms of the time. And, you know, obviously you have to adjust for earnings, and it's just, it's not fun nor funny. So, you know, it's a big, big, big problem. And as far as the compensation issue, you know, I in terms of problems right now, that's the number two issue I see, where, you know, the employer is allowing for contributions and deferrals on one set of definition compensation. The plan document says something completely else. You know, usually the plan sponsor is not including a portion of compensation that they need to, and they may owe corrective contributions for the late contributions, as well as the opportunity to defer, because they denied, you know, people the opportunity to defer, you know, let's say on bonuses.
Yep. Oh yeah, no. It on some of the private label stuff that we did for a you know, fairly big consulting group. The private equity stuff where there were new plans, standard practice is just to mirror the old plan. And inevitably what happens is companies change, right? They evolve. And that definition of comp doesn't. And that is where I really see a lot of the big issues. You know, folks not even knowing, like not even having a clue that this should have been included or that should be excluded. You know, this isn't specific to the definition of comp, but severance, right? Severance is, you know, typically not deferrable, and yet we see folks trying to submit contributions on severance all the time.
Yeah. What I was going to say is, years ago, when I was working at that law firm, we had a potential client matter, and you know, we had a client. Well, it really never mattered until a client, but they were a bank, a publicly traded bank, and for 20 some odd years, they'd include bonus as their definition of compensation. Their auditor, really one of the, I don't know, what are we, down to four top accounting firms? I don't even know anymore.
Think so.
I'm so out of it. Back in the day when I was trying to get a job with one of those firms 20 years ago, it mattered to me how many there were. But they did the audit, and for 20 years, they didn't catch the error. And I didn't get them as a client because I told them they actually had applied to the voluntary compliance program, and they found an ERISA attorney who says, no, you could self-correct it. It really could be costly. It's such an unnecessary error, but there again, there lies the payroll aspect of it, because the employer is assuming that they should include or exclude a certain part of compensation. The plan document says something completely else.
Yep. And that's a big part of what we do, right? That's a big part of what the software is programmed to sort of spot.
Right. And the next, probably the last payroll issue, because we've talked about the payroll provider TPAs and all that stuff, but the last issue that I see with payroll is loans, the problem with loans. The problem with multiple loans, where whether it's one loan or multiple loans, payroll is not being applied to pay off some of these loans. And that's a problem, because we're going to get a prohibitive transaction if the plan participant doesn't pay at least quarterly and falls into a default.
Loans are a separate issue. They're a monster. They're constantly changing. We've got, it's entirely the multiple loan scenario that you laid out. It's a frequent practice that folks will pay down a loan just to take out another loan, and that's always something that needs to be managed very precisely. There's a ton of room for error there. Another thing that's come up recently is some record keepers have given the participant the means of paying their loan off directly. So on Tuesday, that person has a loan outstanding with, say, $3,000. Wednesday, they're applying for a brand new loan because their plan allows two loans. And come Monday, when we send this feedback file back to the plan sponsor, they're completely lost. They had the guy having a loan payment of $50 for the next 2 years. Now he's got something entirely different for the next 5 years. There's a ton of moving parts to it. Very topical in the sense that we were talking to a prospective client recently. A huge issue with loans that no one really pays attention to is if you leave your job, that loan is coming due. Right? We roll loans over a lot of times in transactions, but there's really no mechanism for you to roll your loan over to your new 401k plan. I think there's some services out there that'll allow you to continue paying your loan outside of the retirement plan, but you can't just roll your assets into, ABC Company's new retirement from XYZ Company's plan and expect to have that loan continue. So you end up looking at a sizable tax event. I mean, if you took out a loan to pay for your mortgage, and 2-3 years later, you quit your job, suddenly you've got $20,000-$25,000 of income that you need to report, that you never pay taxes on. Plus, there's the 10% IRS penalty, which, in that example, is $2,500 right out of the box. So there are a lot of things to consider. I don't think everyone I know, folks generally don't consider this stuff. But at the same time, there are instances where folks need access to their money. So it's hard for me to say, you know, take it away entirely. I'd probably be inclined to your perspective, Ari, and limit it to a loan outstanding. But to your original point, loans are very difficult to manage and ripe for potential compliance issues if not looked after carefully.
Yeah, I mean, in my practice, I always do one loan outstanding. That usually is the way to go. But the problem is you have a lot of plan sponsors out there that have 7-8 loans. And what I find is they'll, you know, pay off 5 or 6 loans and then forget the rest. And so you'll, you know, there's nothing worse than trying to tell a participant that you got a deemed distribution. And if you didn't have a deemed distribution, you know, you have to fix it. I mean, it's just such a nonsense nightmare that I think that if you know, there are opportunities where a plan sponsor has only one loan outstanding and it still gets screwed up. But I always believe that when you have that language in there limiting the amount of loans, you know, it puts you out of harm's way, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, no, agree.
So I think that's it, that for this topic. I think it was a great topic because, again, this is something that I see that's very, very popular, not in terms of popular like, you know, something on YouTube, but something very, very common these days with plan sponsors. And really, plan providers really have to know how to spot these issues, as well as plan sponsors understanding that payroll is such a huge deal in terms of the compliance errors. So.
Yeah, maybe we'll go viral with this one, bud.
We'll see. We still have.
You did. I didn't want to stop you earlier, but I think you inadvertently brought up a really good topic for a future podcast. How do you determine? And this has nothing to do with today's topic, but how do you determine self-correction versus voluntary correction? Don't answer that, but I think that's something we should talk about in the future.
Yeah, we can talk about the voluntary compliance programs and then, you know, the times where it's self-correction, because the IRS did come back a few weeks back and say these, now you could do these problems in self-correction that you could never do until now. So it's interesting time. So yeah, that's definitely a great idea for a topic.
Good stuff. Okay. You anything big planned for the weekend?
No, my kids have a bar mitzvah to go to on Saturday. A classmate of theirs from Hebrew school, and got nothing else planned. Jason wants us to go to the Empire State Fair in Nassau Coliseum, where he wants me to spend $200 on a bunch of rides that, you know, wouldn't be a ripple compared to, you know, Hershey Park or, you know, Disney or, you know, some of the other better parks that we've gone to.
Sure. Is he going to win that argument?
I don't know. You know, I may buy him off with some Mets tickets on Monday night. They're playing the Marlins, and it's like such cheap tickets.
There you go, bud. Game of Thrones is coming to an end this week, and I know you're not a fan, but...
Listen, if I, you know, watch the finale, it'll be the first episode I ever watched.
Yeah, well, and Big Bang ended last night.
That's another show that I never watched.
Have you watched that one?
Nope.
That's another great show.
We had the season finale of Survivor, and this weekend we got the WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view, even though it's not...
Oh, right. Hey, what happened to Rick? Is he okay? Is he coming out of the hospital?
Looks okay. You know, supposedly it's not as serious as they make it out to be, but Ashley Massaro, who we met at a... My daughter and I met at an autograph show a few years back. She committed suicide. She was a diva back in the day, like 10 years ago, and then she was a contestant in Survivor China. She died right by you in Smithtown.
No way, really?
Yeah. Ashley Massaro, she died. She was 39 years old.
That's sad.
I know, exactly.
Oh, man. Oh, well. Okay. Now,
I stopped going to these wrestling events. I looked at the pictures from the event I went to, and I'm like, there are 4 people that are dead. All my baseball signings, I only know like one guy who died. All my baseball cards signings, I think I only been to, you know, Catfish Hunter as a kid and Frank Robinson.
Frank Robinson? We just lost Frank.
Right, so.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Wow. Sad.
Exactly. So. That's it. Until next week.
right, guys. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the spring weather.
Take care.
See ya, bud.
Bye.